there's a way of life here that's just really attractive. And like, this city gave me personally my life.
Thanks for listening to the Rachel Zimmerman Show on KMOX. I have a great guest for you this week. His name is Mike Isaacson. He's the artistic director and executive producer of The Muni. I'm so honored to have you here, Mike. Let's start by talking about the fact that The Muni is just now entering the 107th season. How does that feel for you? How does that feel for the entire team?
You know, it's this very, honestly, it's this very strange rhythm. Like, we've already opened and closed a show. I mean, we all looked at each other yesterday and went, what just happened? And if you saw Bring It On, it just turned out so well. And the months and months of planning and execution and comments and or just exploration of minutia, how are we going to do this in every step of the way? And then, you know, it's all in your head and it's all in meetings and it's all in Zooms. And then suddenly there's 10,000 people there and doing it. And it's really, it's very powerful, kind of hard to understand because we're also in a rhythm. We know what to do and when to do it. You know, our motto backstage is we are the Just Do It Theater. Trust your instincts, trust your colleagues, go. So it's this beautiful, fantastical, hard to understand moment, which it sounds crazy after all these years. And for me personally, I'm just trying to, you know, you just try to be in it moment to moment where, you know, it's a, you know, knocking whatever this is, it's a good time for us. We've done a lot of work, a lot of hard work. The community's responding to who we are and what we're creating and coming to the Muni. So it feels good. It's also very hard. Our ambitions are clear. We set high standards for ourselves. We have, and this is not a complaint, but it's a reality, we have limited resources because we have to make everything effective. And at the level with which we're producing, there's a lot of departments, there's a lot of communication. And so it never stops challenging. And really at this point, what comes into, if we've done all our pre-pro correctly, basically right now comes into the biggest challenges are what are just, you'd call the human factor. Something comes up with somebody, they're sick or something that sort of comes through that you can't anticipate and you have to respond to that and figure out how to do it is sort of really what happens now, because hopefully we know exactly what we're doing.
I feel like I kind of buried the lead here. You just won a Tony. Describe what that reaction was like from the whole team. What that was like.
You know, it's great. I'd recommend it to anybody. it was a big surprise, and I've said this before. I'd kind of given up. It didn't. You know, I thought maybe we might be. We might receive it around the 100th because that felt really obvious to me and that didn't happen. And it's not anything you can apply for. It's not, you know, it is something that is granted through this, I now understand, labyrinth process between the American Theater Critics Association, the League, the Wing, this whole thing. And I got the call and I was shocked. I cried. And it's been interesting since then how much it really has meant to everybody. And I think it's, at least the way we're all sort of receiving it, you know, it's been acknowledgement of the transformation of this theater. It's been acknowledgement of the 107 years of this community supporting this theater. You know, it's not just one thing. But in that, you know, great Muni way, once the thing got to St. Louis, we threw a massive barbecue backstage. Everyone could take their pictures with it. You know, like everyone feels connected to it. That if there was anything that really knocked me off was how many people in St. Louis, in New York, around the country, even around the world, felt pride and connected to the Muni and this recognition and this honor. So, you know, if you've worked really hard and you've tried to create something, and, you know, this is in a context of, it's pretty public information, a lot of theaters have fallen apart. It's a hard time for a theater. And we have waded through those waters successfully. Our audience is with us. and engaged. And so it's sort of an acknowledgement of that too, I think.
Yeah, you know, you just brought up how much this theater means to so many people. When I was watching your Tony acceptance speech, Kofi Coleman talked about the fact that he started there as an usher.
Yeah.
Now he's the CEO.
Yeah.
Talk a little bit about just the careers the Muni has launched, the dreams the Muni has launched.
You know, it has always been sort of what I acknowledge, sort of within the Broadway community, a premier starting ground. It is, you know, a badge, so to speak. And if anybody in New York sees Muni in your resume, that means a certain thing. Mm. And that is something that's really attractive to people because we're disciplined, we're focused, we're kind, we're funny. And the thing about the Muni, you have to understand, as compared to every other theater in the country, and particularly Broadway, you walk through the back gate and you see people painting your sets and building your sets, and you see the customers, and you go into the canteen, and there's the workers, and they know each other, and you're sitting with the marketing partner. Like, there's no way to work at the Muni and not understand that you're a part of something bigger, and then particularly when this glorious audience shows up, right? And it's been a part of their lives for all that. And that's actually very freeing for a lot of artists, because they can get in their heads and think it's all about them or their work only, and that's not what theater is. And In most other theaters, particularly on Broadway, you never see the sets being built. You never see the marketing department, which is 24 hours a day. You don't, if you're just in the theater, what that is. So it's a different sense, and that's a very important and powerful sense in how you treat other people and how you act and how you understand. And the other thing that's just because of the really tight time frame and what we need to do, you know, I always say we're a collection of Palominos. That's who we hire. And it's the kind of person who just sees the opportunity, understands what the need is for their colleagues, and fills it and goes forward. So it's a particular skill set that's freeing. And, you know, hundreds of actors and, you know, one of the premier Broadway producers this season, you know, has one of my former interns, and he came up to me thinking, I want to thank you for this, you know, this kid's name. And I was like, well, it's not like I raised him, but there's also a work ethic. We work really hard, and that's a Midwestern thing, right? That's, you know, I was a Midwestern kid. That's kind of who we are. And that comes forward too. So it is a top thing we have, you know, and right now the number of applicants for all our summer internships, I mean, even this year for like 20 slots, I think we had like 750 applicants from around the country.
Wow.
So it's known in this community, in this culture, as a great place to work and where you're going to learn. And when I meet with the interns early on, I try to just give them, I'm like, look, at everyone's path different, and there's no one path. I mean, my path to get here doesn't make any sense, right? But There's things here that you can learn and decide, can you adapt that? Is this right for you? And the number one thing I say is just get in every room you can and listen and watch how these people are working. It's the best advice I got from my first boss at McDonnell Douglas. You know, like, he kind of had nothing for me to do, interestingly, you know, that first job thing. And I was like, he's like, you know what, I'm just going to put you in a room, sit in the back and watch how this happens and how people treat each other and how to be a professional. It's great. And we really have that with our interns there. We try to expose them to everything, so they really see and how I lead a meeting, how my colleagues lead, and how we treat each other. And, you know, I went to public grade schools, but I went to a Jesuit high school, and that's the whole knife sharpened on stone thing. And I'm a big believer in that. You know, and you have to be able to talk about conflict. Conflict is a necessary part of the creative process. But how you manage it and how people feel about it when you're through is the most important thing. Mm. And understand that that's okay, because we will get something better if there's opposing forces shaping, coming around it, we will get something better. So it's all these fundamentals that we try to, you know, teach kids, I can say it, and they move forward. And then from the artist standpoint, like for the actors, you know, it's a very fast process compared to most theaters. I mean, yeah, we'll just leave it at that. But what happens is they come through it trusting themselves, realizing, oh, their first choice, their first instincts was spot on. Mm. Get out of your head, just do it. Give the gift you have. And that ends up being very powerful and freeing for them when they leave here, because they know, oh, I can do this. I understand. And meaning that, you know, actors, very talented people are the most self-critical. Mm. I've learned that. Right? So you have to help them understand, like I say, perfection's not a thing here. I don't know what that is. That's somebody else telling you you're not good enough. Right? Mm-hmm. So just use your gifts with your colleagues in a manner that feels great, and that will be more than enough. You are enough.
Stick around, guys. I have more with Mike Isaacson, executive producer of The Muni, up next on The Rachel Zimmerman Show. Welcome back to The Rachel Zimmerman Show on KMOX. I am talking to Mike Isaacson today. He is the artistic director and executive producer of The Muni. So you're obviously very proud of the work you do at The Muni. My question is, have you ever been to a theater? Have you ever heard of a theater that is even close to what we have here?
No. I mean, the phrase The Muni used for decades was alone in its greatness, and that's actually true. And if you look at it, there was a historic period, I'm going to say, in the 40s, 50s, 60s, I think it sort of waned in the 70s, where you had Dallas summer musicals. There was a thing in Atlanta, Kansas City Starlight, which still exists, but is now very different. The Muni, and then there was a theater in Indianapolis. And basically, they would all start shows and then move and tour. So one of the things in the history of the Muni was actually there was a period where it was mostly tours, like things that were created outside and came in, like what the Fox does. Mm-hmm. You know, those are Broadway tours, mm-hmm. right? So the switch to we produce everything, which really happened under the guy before me, Paul Blake, part of that was there was just nobody else. You know, everything was crumbling around. Mm-hmm. So this was your one shot at it. And, you know, God love the board at the time that they supported that idea, because a lot of theaters just went, no, like Kansas City Starlight made what was now historically, I think, a mistake. They built a stage house, meaning a roof. They were outdoor like we were, completely open air, so that they can support Broadway tours. So now the experience is when you go to Starlight is you're watching a Broadway tour, but you're sitting outside. There's, it's a, you know, it could be a great Broadway tour, but there's nothing singular about it. Mm-hmm. I mean, our work is singular. You're not going to see it told in a manner like this, how we use the stage, we use the trees, we use all these elements. So, yeah, it's there's only one.
I'm talking with Mike Isaacson. He is the artistic director and executive producer of The Muni. Mike, talk a little bit about the support of St. Louisans that The Muni has had over the years, and how this community helps your theater succeed.
You know, that soil is really rich. When you go back to the original era of its creation, and it was led by the mayor and civic leaders with representation of all sort of symbolic cultural or political areas. Like when you look at all the little all those original boards, there was civic, there was business, there was labor, there was like everybody, like it was the idea of a community creating a theater for itself, which is so beautiful. I mean, I'm astounded that that doesn't get more attention nationally. I mean, unbelievable. So you've always had that as a soil. What's interesting about the economics of it, and this is sort of kind of when I came in 2011, pretty much over to that point, and there'd been some ups and downs, that's going to happen with any theater, they could support themselves mostly by ticket sales with some very private philanthropy. When you go back to the early days, like the idea of the Muni guarantors, and you know, this is in the 20s and 30s, I believe, the idea was the Muni would do the shows, and if you were a Muni guarantor, if they got to the end of the year and the ticket sales didn't match what the production costs were, everything they needed to run the place, they divided it up by the guarantors and you got a bill and you paid it. I mean, how astounding is that?
Wow.
Right. So you have this thing. What was interesting, though, was by the 70s and 80s, that idea of, hey, we need you as a community for some level of financial support had kind of gone away. It was just seen as like, oh, this community, they're fine, and certainly there's other worthy endeavors. When I came in, and what that support was it was clear the lines were going to begin really diverging. And when we looked at the stage house and everything, it's just like we had a huge need and it was looming. And what was so great was, and this is when Denny was there, we began the conversation with the board, we moved through, they totally understood the need. We really had to build up a development department. We didn't have it to any major degree. And then as we were approaching the 100th, we did the big moment. And that was, you know, 100 year, we went out and raised $100 million, which not only was a so ambitious number, but for an institution that had never done a public capital campaign. I mean, this was like, hi, we just started, you know, running track and now we're going to the Olympics. And this community stepped up in such a huge way because of, obviously, it surprised me. I get emotional about it, but those decades of coming and being and with families, it said, this means something to us. Mm-hmm. See, that's what happened after post-COVID and a lot of things for a lot of theaters, where the audiences get back. The hard message was, this actually doesn't mean that much to us. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's a really hard thing. You have to rebuild. You have to get that connection. But that our audience, you know, stayed with us. But so that support, and you have that with the generations of families who come, the free seats, the community access tickets, you know, like... And that's why, for me, the imperative of giving everybody who's invested a great show, right? It can't just be good. It's got to be great. You know, it's a summer night. This needs to be something that everybody's very proud of and connected to. So, like I said, our ambitions are high. We're not shy about that. But this community's relationship to it, you know, one of the things Broadway is struggling with, sort of using the other hand of my brain, is there was sort of a cultural shift. I trace it to a certain moment where, you know, there used to be a period where to be a Manhattanite, or, you know, you knew what was going on Broadway and you went and it was theirs, right? That kind of shifted in the 90s, early 2000s, when somehow it was allowed to be perceived as something tourists do or other people do. And there was different subcultures, and it's sort of a broad stroke. But you need that. You need that sense of, this is ours and this is connected. It's very much like a sports team, right? You need that sense of relationship. It can be, you know, it can have its ups and downs, but it never completely goes away. And the Muni has had that. God love St. Louis.
Part 3 of my interview with Mike Isaacson, artistic director and executive producer of the Muni, is up next on The Rachel Zimmerman Show. Mike Isaacson is the artistic director and executive producer of the Muni. Here's part 3 of my interview with him on The Rachel Zimmerman Show on KMOX. You know, you talk about that connection and that relationship that you have to have. Do you think the Muni is able to have such a strong connection with its audience because of your mission to be accessible for all? I mean, I think a lot of places say they want that because it's a nice thing to say. Mm-hmm. And then there's actually putting it into practice. What does that mean to you?
I think we definitely live it and we put it into practice. And you know, between the free seats, the community relations, the wheelchair pushers, and, you know, what that means is, at the core, is that and there's always work to be done. There's always people and communities who don't know about you, and you have to find ways, because it's easy to sort of, don't get me off on this one, but it's easy to be portrayed as, this is not for you. Now, the gift I have on that is I'm always doing musicals, which is the great American art form, and people feel connected to that in all walks of life. So, you know, you do have that connection coming through. I think, again, the thing about the Muni is you can see it. You see the wheelchair pushers. You can see the free seats. you can look around and you know, you can see people with disabilities and, you know, it's visual. It's also summer. Mm-hmm. And there's something about summer that, you know, everyone kind of takes a breath and lighten up, Francis. And also, you know, everyone's kind of dressed the same. So you eliminate class. You know, you sort of get this thing. And, you know, I'd like to believe, and maybe this is Pollyannish, but, you know, I think one of the attractions is everybody knows when they go to the Muni, they're going to be with people very different from themselves. Surrounded, and they're fine with that. We're all here to see a show. Let's take this adventure together. You know, that sun goes down and, you know, off we go. It's interesting, in my work on Broadway, the period where Broadway felt most united to New York and so strong of like, oh, this is important, we all need to be together, was after 9/11. Mm. You know, because the theater shut down for about 5 days. The mayor insisted you have to open, you know, and it was a terrifying environment. Nobody knew what was going on. Come From Away, which one we're in rehearsal for right now, explores that day in Gander, Newfoundland. And you know, there was sort of a united cause. And everyone sort of dropped whatever and worked together. And I remember that era really fondly of like working on Broadway. And Seth Sklar-Hein, who's directing Come From Away and has been a part of the Broadway community for decades, we were talking about it like that was just so joyous, everybody united. You do feel that at the Muni. Everyone, you know, they're picnicking before, or you're up at the various plazas, and there's just a sense of community. You know, I say to the artists that come, you're not doing community theater, you're doing a Broadway show, but you're doing it for a community and with a community, and a community loves it. And they so appreciate that.
I'm talking with Mike Isaacson, the artistic director and executive producer of the Muni. You just mentioned, you know, you're in rehearsals now for Come From Away. I'm curious, how do you start to select this season's shows? Like, how does that process start?
So it's not a formula, but no. Here's sort of the basic palette. 7 shows, and every season since I've been there, 2 of the shows at least have never been on the Muni stage before. Mm. Then we always have what I would call 2 classics, and that's its whole conversation that day, because right now it's divided between 2 eras. Everything up to 1964 and everything sort of 75 after, you know, because if you look at the audience now, their classics are all the Andrew Lloyd Webber stuff, the Les Mis, you know, like that's their generational classics. If you go to the, you know, 65 and above, you're talking My Fair Lady, blah, 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 blah. And so you sort of have that. Then we always have one big family. Okay, bring the kids, grandma, grandparents, thing. And this year, obviously, it's Disney's Frozen. So that's kind of the basic tent poles we look for. And then those other 2 are a wide range, depending on what the 5 are and how they fit. We have our audience surveys. And it's, you know, we start with the first show, you can do it. And we look at where they're at, and what their votes are. And honestly, I'm never really surprised by the top 10. And I don't mean that cynically, but you just sort of know. So you sort of go, oh, okay, you know, we look at it artistically, we have to look at it financially, like we need a certain amount of numbers that we know are really going to deliver to pay. And then I'm also talking to different artists and directors and actors of their dreams of, you know, if I can get this show, would you do it at the Muni? So it kind of all comes together. We, you know, I get calls from Broadway producers who are working on shows and could we do a developmental production there and sort of thing. So it kind of all mixes in that way. At the end of the day, what I hope to do is when you look at all 7 shows, if you're a subscriber, you're going to have a heck of an adventure. You know, I mean, could there be anything more different from Bring It On, the musical, than Come From Away? And then we go to, no, but that's what it should be. The summer should be a feast. It should be, this is crazy great, you know, and we're doing that. We're going to do Evita. Like, it should be that. If you're a single ticket buyer, no matter who you are in this community, I hope there's at least one where you go, oh, I want to see that, you know, and that's kind of the best I can do. And the universe kind of decides it. And we're always surprised. I mean, I think people are surprised to hear when I say this is the new titles always sell better than the classics, which I sort of understand because it's the American culture. We're just kind of always obsessed with the new. At the same time, you know, I love musicals and we're coming up on, if you're going to take Showboat in 1929, we're basically coming up at the first century of the American musical. So it's still a new form. And as you see, as you go through the decades, there's shows that survive and make it, and there's some that fade away, and that's okay. That's kind of what it's meant to be. Stephen Sondheim, musicals are written for their time and their age. They're not written for the ages. But there's certain great works. I would argue Fiddler, West Side Story, that we're finding that in time there is an essential beauty, power, whatever to it, that just no matter what time you're presenting in it, the show moves an audience. So I'm very sort of like, I think everybody should see West Side Story once a decade. I think they should see Fiddler once a decade. You know, like these are our great, these are our Shakespeare. Mm. These are the things that we have created, and they are now done around the world. They are revered and respected, and they tell us something about ourselves. They tell us about our central, you know, the American character and who we are, and they explore, you know, everything about us. So I actually get on a soapbox when we're doing Fiddler. I'm like, bring your kids. Drag your kids. And this is a gift we have in St. Louis, because I'm going to give you a beautiful first-class Fiddler. Like, gorgeous. Like, you know, when people actually, I'm sort of harking on Fiddler last year, but it was great production. And when people come up to me and they'd say, this is the first time I'm seeing Fiddler, I'm like, I'm jealous. Like, this would be the first time you'd see this glorious work. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
There's more with Mike Isaacson, the artistic director and executive producer of the Muni, up next on The Rachel Zimmerman Show. So stick around. Guys, thank you so much for listening today. Now it's time for the final part of my interview with Mike Isaacson. He is the artistic director and executive producer of the Muni. You've been alluding to this, but I want to ask you about the challenge of producing a show in 11 days. The challenge, the difficulty, the beauty in that. Just try to sum that up if you can.
It requires at the fundamental. We've worked really hard to get here. I mean, years and years of work, and you know, obviously, the work doesn't just start in the first day. There's months and months of conversations and. Very specific conversation. So basically by the middle of April, for each of our productions, myself, my production supervisor, Tracy Utzmeyers, my associate, Michael Baxter, we're hosting Zooms for every show with everyone involved, director, choreographer, dance, blah, 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 set designer. So you're talking, and all the interns, all the incoming interns and all the associates and stuff. So you're talking about 40 people. And what happens at that moment, there's been enough work been done on the set and the understanding of the show where the designer presents the set and everyone begins to see the show, understand exactly what we're doing. And the director talks us through what we know at that point. And it's a very powerful thing because you can, as a department, you know, we're at a point where like someone from the wardrobe department will say, how quickly is that transition? Because I know that character has to do a quick change. And do we have enough music? I mean, we're asking these minutiae questions in April. So, and early on. And we have now, as a team, done enough that we can look at a script and look at things. We know where the danger points are. Mm-hmm. Danger is a strong word, but, you know, where the challenges are. And then we're also pushing each other each year, trying to do new things. So the goal is by the time we actually start the first day, everybody in every department has all their questions answered. So they can just do, we can just sort of execute. And of course the human factor comes in. And then the other thing is if you do that correctly, or mostly correctly, it actually allows in the moment for real creativity. Suddenly a choreographer is like, wait, we saw that, we didn't realize this. What if we did this? And everyone can breathe because they're not trying to get the initial thing done. Mm. They understand, great, let's make that cut. Let's do this. Let's build that additional piece. Let's do that this way. Let's add that music or add, you know, that. So to make it better, to make it more richer or work on the stage. So that's really what it is. I mean, the basic template is 7 days after the cast arrives, they run the show. The whole thing has to be staged and they do it in front of all the designers and myself and everybody. And it's a big Muni ritual. It's so beautiful. Sometimes I'm like, can we just stop here? Do we have to take it to the 10,000? You know, because it's so pure. It's everybody's just doing what they're doing. And it's not about perfection. So there's a mistake in line and people are doing it. But it's the moment everybody sees really how good it is. and excited. And then, and so the day after that, they can just do fixes and stuff. And then we go into the weekend of tech, where that day is the cast rehearsed for a couple hours in the day. They go home, they come in at 7. All the designers, all of us have been working all day. We tech the show from 7 p.m. to midnight. The cast goes home, all of us, meaning the whole production team, which is that 30, 40 people. We go up to a room and we go from the downbeat of what we'd seen just 5 hours before, and we have it videoed, and we go over moments that need to be fixed, clarified that. And that, you know, there's times that's gone to like 4 a.m. sometimes if it just doesn't go well. For the most part, we're usually out by 1:32. That, and then the next day, rehearsals for the cast, fixes, and then we come in that night, we run it again with all the changes, everything we've learned, blah, blah, blah. And it goes, it's astonishing how smoothly it can go the second night. Then the following day, the cast comes in for a couple hours, whatever related fixes, things they need to learn. And then we give it to 10,000 people that night. And then we don't stop. So the next morning after the first performance, that group re-meets. We do final changes, anything we've learned, anything cueing, anything that just wasn't right. And those changes go into the second performance. And then we're pretty much frozen for the rest of it. They might make a minute change here and there, but everything's sort of set.
Yeah, it's interesting. We started out the interview by you talking about how the Muni is, you know, the motto is kind of like the just do it theater. But then to hear about just the amount of work that goes into it in order to have that mindset where you've prepared so much that you are just able to execute. That's quite impressive. I would love to see like a documentary, a behind the scenes of the Muni. I think a lot of people would be very interested in that.
You know, we've been approached once or twice.
Really?
And the other thing I've gotten calls on is the reality show thing. And, you know, one of the things about people are very vulnerable. They're creating, they're putting themselves out there. They're in a process. They're discovering, no matter who you are, whether you're stitching or like, you know. And I've never been comfortable subjecting them to a camera like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, in the reality show thing, they always have to have a villain, right? So they're going to pick somebody out. But that whole sense of it is a deeply human endeavor. And maybe it'll happen someday. I'm not against it. But for me, that kind of exposure, plus the way we work backstage and how quickly things go, like the thought of cameras running around, I mean, they wouldn't know what to cover. So I've always been a little bit, my guess is it's inevitable someday, but that's tricky for me.
Mike, this is my final question for you. You said you were a Midwestern kid, but you're not from St. Louis, right? You're a transplant.
Yeah, I came to college in 1982, St. Louis U.
And what makes you want to be here? Because you really could be working anywhere. You have worked on Broadway. You have worked in New York. Yeah. What do you love about St. Louis? What makes you want to stay here?
Prior to coming here from college, I'd moved around a lot as a kid. My family moved around a lot. So I came here for college. I did not expect to stay just because my life had been nomadic. And here, I love cities. I was always a city kid, like fine downtown and whatever. Mm-hmm. And the people here were so kind to me and gave me such amazing opportunities. And I just think, you know, even the arc of being here from 82 to now, St. Louis has gone through, I would say, one if not two rediscoveries, right? And that's interesting to me. You go to New York, the rules are set. It's not going to change. Mm. It runs on money. It runs on a certain thing. Like, you know, it's Wall Street. Like, it just is. St. Louis, for, you know, a variety of reasons, like a lot of American cities, has had to figure out how to redefine itself. And I think that's really interesting because, to me, I find the essential character of people here, you know, I mean, God knows we have our flaws, but they are well-intentioned. And they are sincere, and there is a way of living here. Like, I think post COVID, people are really aware of the advantages of a mid-sized city. You know, we have all the attributes of something's great food, you know, the arts, a lifestyle that's manageable. You know, you have to work on the fundamentals. You have to work on schools. You have to work on healthcare. All those things everyone's struggling with. But there's a way of life here that's just really attractive. And in that very Pollyannish thing, like this city gave me personally my life, like who I am. And I met my husband here and his family and everything that really matters to me. So doing the Muni for me is partially also a sense of gratitude. Like this city deserves a great theater, this great, weird, wacky thing. Like it deserves it. And so let's live that. And I know it sounds kind of, but it is honestly the way I feel. And, you know, I don't have kids, you know, so you can take a certain amount of energy and give it to that. And I think everyone there really, I'm not alone in that. Everyone feels that we're serving this community with this place and this idea. And, you know, my highest ambition has always been, you watch a Muni show and it's massive and believe in, you know, if you know anything, it's been in 12 days and you go, my God, how did they do this? To me, I try to give every week, besides a great show, the gift of possibility. Look what we can do. This is all St. Louis doing this, you know, and so I do believe that over time, and that's sort of where the Tony fits in, to me, it was sort of this acknowledgement of the transformation we'd worked so hard on, that you can make life better for your fellow citizens. You can do things. It's never easy. It's always hard. But if you set out for that in the long run, you can do it. And I like that we serve as, and I know Kofi feels the same way, as that, hopefully that idea that people see some of that, of that, you know, every, you know, people are always like, the New York thing is fascinating to me. Like, and I'm saying to people now, go walk up Broadway. Every store is shuttered. Every window says for lease. Mm. Every city in America is struggling with post-COVID and what happened in the redefinition of the workplace. And, you know, everyone's doing that. We are not alone in these challenges. We're not alone in a really complicated history, you know, but it's who do we say we are now and how do we move forward? And I love that the Muni, in its presence, in its execution, maybe gives people a window to consider that.
That's Mike Isaacson, the artistic director and executive producer of the Muni. Mike, this has been such an incredible conversation. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. This is great.
If you missed any part of my conversation with Mike Isaacson today, the podcast is out now. Just search for The Rachel Zimmerman Show on the Odyssey app or anywhere else you get your podcasts. I hope you guys have an amazing weekend, and thanks for listening. Bye.